Today's podcast is sponsored by two of our very own Retromaniacs from the Retro Asylum community, Stotz31 and Mr. Sid. Thank you very much, guys. We really appreciate your generous donations. Hi there, guys. This is Andy from Retro Asylum Podcast. It's time for another pre-podcast announcement. Now, the first things first, I'm not actually on this episode of the podcast. No sorry. Today's episode was recorded by our very own co-host, Matt Dinaris. So big thanks to Matt for taking the time to do this. Now, the reason why Matt's recording this is he's helping quite a bit because leading up to Christmas, we're all very, very tied up. Dean's recently become a dad again, I'm going to become a dad, and probably everyone's going to, you know, do lots of Christmas shopping, so it's kind of hard. So we have pre-recorded a few episodes in advance, so that way we can provide you with the UK's number one retro gaming podcast every Friday. So yeah, I'm rambling on now. So big special thanks to Dinaris for actually taking the time to record this podcast. I'm sure you're all going to enjoy it. Please feel free to comment, leave us an iTunes review, and don't forget you can win the N64 at the end of the competition by guessing those three music tracks. Enjoy the show. Thanks, guys.
Welcome once again to the Retro Asylum podcast. This is number 28 and a half, and I am Matt Dinaris taking you through. I've got loads of things I want to talk about in this episode, so I'm going to try and keep everything reasonably brief, but no doubt I'll go on a complete ramble and bore the living daylights out of myself. No, nothing like that at all. But we're getting ever closer to Christmas, and Christmas for me is still, even in my 30s, a magical time of the year. I love it. I just turn into a big kid still. Now, I'm going to question later on why I turn into a big kid. I want to see if I can come out of it a bit clearer about myself on that. So this is kind of a self-development Retro Asylum podcast as well. Also, we've got some news, potentially a review or two, and I'm just going to run through some more bits and pieces that will hopefully be of interest to you. And don't forget, we got the N64 competition, which I will run through how you win that a bit later on. So coming straight on to some news. Kickstarter is obviously making massive splashes and waves in the industry at the moment. I'm sure it's hitting many, many other industries. I know musically, certainly, it's become a place where you can promote your works on there and try and get some backing behind it. But I think we all know about what Kickstarter is doing to the video games industry, to use that term fairly loosely. You've got big development companies now going on there to try and fund their next project rather than sitting back and doing it the traditional way. So we may be seeing a start of something a little bit new here with what development companies can do, because essentially they can poll out to their key audience, their key demographic, and say, what do you want? We want to do this in a game. Are you happy doing this? And give levels of essentially sponsorship into that project. And I think it's I think on one hand it's almost a little bit cheeky, and I'm gonna talk about a couple in a moment, but then when I think about it more logically, it's actually a really good way to do business. Essentially you're getting the money for something up front, and you're going to be able to develop it, and you can see with the Android powered console that Ouya, or however you say that, it was massively successful on there. So if they can deliver that as a project, I think that will be seen as one of the big Kickstarter successes. And there's also been some other games, I can't list them at the moment, that have been greatly successful on there. But I'm going to come on to a couple now, which one of them, well, both of them are going to be quite dear to a lot of listeners' hearts, I'm sure. And the first one is Elite. Now, for those that don't know, Elite is a a kind of space trading game, which first came out in the 1980s, written by David Brabham and Ian Bell. I know those two aren't mutually exclusive anymore. That was followed up by Frontier, which was released on the Amiga and I think the PC and potentially the ST as well, in the 16-bit days in about 1993. Elite, it's a game that I've never got into. I really, really love the idea of it, and I still love the idea of it to this day. And when Frontier was due to come out, I was getting so excited about it in all the Amiga magazines, reading about it. I thought, this is after Formula One Grand Prix, which is my favourite Amiga game of all time, I think we could easily say. I thought that was going to be the greatest game pretty much known to man. When it came out, I was significantly disappointed with it. And I don't think that's because the game was bad necessarily. It's probably because my mindset isn't really into that type of really in-depth games. But to be able to reproduce, and in David Brabham's own words, the whole of the Milky Way reasonably accurately on one floppy disk is just outstanding and out of this world. If you know anything about the Milky Way, there's a lot of things out there in deep space which we will never get to in our lifetime. So Frontier was massively successful. I think it was fairly bug ridden when it was first released. Certainly I'm sure the PC version was slated for the amount of bugs in it. I could just never get into it, and I would love to be able to dedicate a week of my life to getting down with it and really getting on with it. Before I come on to the Kickstarter, I think I should mention an open source version of Elite, OOLEET, which is Object Oriented Elite. I believe, having again never really played it, I have downloaded it and tried it a couple of times, and I would love to get into it again. I don't know whether it's an exact accurate replica of Elite, but it's essentially a recreation of Elite for Mac, PC and Linux. It's been out a number of years now. I think it was about 2004, 2005 first come out. There's lots of add-ons for it. What those add-ons do, I'm not too sure. But I think I need to mention it here because it is and looks fantastic and has got a great community behind it from what I can tell. So yeah, if you type in OOLEET, that's OOLEET.org into your favourite web browser, you will find that there, and it's a free download. If you loved Elite, I think it's going to be right up your street. But moving on to this Kickstarter, this is David Brabham and his Frontier Developments pitching themselves in a very Dragon's Den kind of way to get essentially £1.25 million to produce Elite Dangerous, Elite for the modern day. And this is Elite brought slap bang up to date with multiplayer online gaming. Obviously, the graphics technology of now will help it along in leaps and bounds. And I think, knowing what David Brabham was like previously, I'm sure we'll have another accurate representation of the Milky Way, and maybe we'll have even more of a fictional kind of space out there. But having watched the very enthusiastic pitch that David puts forward, it really, you can't help but be taken in by it. And I going back to this whole being a bit cheeky thing, is, you know, Frontier Developments are a development company that do games. I think they did Wallace and Gromit on many of the platforms. So, you know, they must have great turnover, great revenue, great profit. Why are they pitching out to get £1.25 million to develop this? I guess it's because, as a major developer and pitching out to publishers, they might not want to do it. They might not want to do an Elite remade for this generation. So Frontier Developments have gone onto the Kickstarter bandwagon, and I think rightfully so, actually. I think rightfully so. So they're looking for £1.25 million. There's 30 days to go at the time of me recording this, which is on the 5th of December. So by the time this comes out, there's probably going to be only about between 15 and 20 days left to go. At the moment, they're halfway to target, which, ooh, I don't know whether that's good or bad, really. Again, like all Kickstarters, there's lots of different levels you can pledge towards it, starting at a fiver, going all the way out to, well, the £5,000 pledges or more has sold out. There's five backers on that, so there's some rich people out there. If you've got £4,500 on you, don't worry, there's still 8 of those left if you want to do that, but I don't dare read out what you can get for that. But even pledging something on the lines of £20, you're going to get a digital copy of the game, amongst other great things. If you go a little bit higher, you actually get your name in the game in some form or other. So there definitely sounds like there's going to be a fictional space element to this as well. I think it's worth a punt, to be honest. I'm really, really tempted to put some money on this. Whether I'll ever have the time or inclination to play it, I don't know. But there's lots of talk of the multiplayer online facilities on this, and they sound great. They sound absolutely great. So get onto Kickstarter, have a look at Elite Dangerous. You only need to chuck that into a search engine and it will come up pretty quickly. Have a look at that. I think for a lot of people listening to this podcast, you're going to be well into that kind of thing. So moving on to the next Kickstarter. So this is something reasonably dear to my heart, is the Amiga Works by Alistair Brimble. Now, Alistair Brimble, for those that don't know, is a musician in the gaming industry and was one of the most maybe prolific on the Amiga, I would say, a very well-used musician across the industry, across the Amiga gaming industry. Always did a very solid job on music. Maybe not the most outstanding tunes all the time, but there'll be a good handful of absolute classics in there. I think this is going to be a great CD. With 27 days to go, he's only 800 quid away from actually reaching the target, so I don't doubt he's going to get that with 27 days to go, but it's still worth putting your money in as well. I'm definitely going to put my money into this one. Now, my slight concerns around this, so essentially he's going to be remixing all his old tunes, all those tunes he actually owns the IP for, I would guess. So you've got Project X, a lot of the Team 7, I assume all the Team 17 catalogue amongst some others, and I think you can suggest others to put on there, so if he has the rights to the tracks, he would do his best to include them. My worry on this is, having heard a lot of remixes of old Amiga tunes by the artists or their original work since then, I'm thinking specifically Bjorn Lynn, who was also a Team 17 musician, and he was quite prolific in the Amiga demo scene before that. Some of his stuff nowadays is a bit bland. It's a bit bland electronic music. I think he makes a lot of music for what they call the library music, where, you know, it's this sort of free licensable stuff. You buy it once, you own the license to it, you can use it in whatever production you want to do it. It's just a bit bland, and I'm a bit worried that a lot of these tunes may turn out that way, whereas the Amiga ones were very punchy and very good. I'm hoping that they're not a bit wishy-washy. The Alien Breed example, which is on the Kickstarter, doesn't tickle my fancy too much, but because I've got a lot of respect for Alistair Brimble, I really feel I've got to chuck a tenner or 20 quid in there to help him out, even though he doesn't really need a lot of helping out because he's nearly reached the target. But if you want to search for that one as well, it's the Amiga Works and it's Alistair Brimble on Kickstarter. Why not get in the comments of this episode and the other episode and chat about some other Kickstarters you think we should feature on here. We're quite up for featuring lots of things which is related to retro gaming, of course, on these podcasts.
Hello everybody, this is Damien and you're listening to Retro Asylum, the best retro gaming podcast.
So, now I want to talk about a company called RGCD. You may or may not know, for those who are new to this podcast, you may be rediscovering retro gaming after being away from it for a long time, and those people who've been listening right from the start, you may only be thinking in terms of retro gaming, and maybe this is going out of the scope of this podcast a little bit, but I really want to bring it up, and I really want to do a big, big feature on this at some point, is the development scene around a lot of these legacy systems, Commodore 64, Spectrum, Amiga, you know, ST, you name it, there's an active development scene on it, the homebrew scene essentially, and this is where people are still writing games for these systems or writing remakes. Our very own Dean Swain is involved in a Double Dragon remake on Spectrum. There's a massive development scene still out there, and none more so than on the Commodore 64, which is just rampant with games coming out month on month. And some of these games are paying 10 quid for, 9, 10 quid for. So for me, it's almost like a second coming of a commercial era on certainly on the Commodore 64, where it's just there's massive amounts of people out there making stuff for this system still, and that's disregarding the whole demo scene thing. If you want to have a Google around about the demo scene, you will see that pretty much every system ever released has got an active demo scene on it still. But the Commodore 64, and coming back to RGCD, met these guys down at Play Expo, and their passion for this kind of thing was really, really something. I really hope to be able to interview them at some point for this podcast. So what do? They run a website, RGCD. You can go to rgcd.co.uk and find that. And they actually release new Commodore 64 games, mainly on cartridge, actually, which is the cartridge format for the Commodore 64 was never that well supported. Commodore did release the C64 GS at some stage, which was a console version of the Commodore 64, which was a massive flop. Really rare now and worth lots of money. I remember one of my good friends at the time, I think, giving his away after using it a handful of times way back in the early 90s, which now when you see them on sale at a computer show for £500, as we did at Play Expo, makes your feet twitch a little bit, doesn't it? But the cartridge format and RGCD, they're producing these 16K cartridges for the Commodore still, with new games on it, or remakes of old games in some cases, old games that maybe never come onto the Commodore 64. And at the moment, they are running one of their cartridge competitions, 16K game competitions, on the website. Or rather, I should say, they have run the competition. It's now ended at the end of November, and two of the games I saw running at the show really, really caught my eye. The first one was called Get 'em DX, and this is a kind of Pac-Man variant, but it's working on maze. You're picking up little pill type things, but when you blow up enemies, it can explode the maze into wider aisles and that. And it's a really cracking little game, two-player, well worth a pop. If you get over to RGCD, you can actually download them from there for free, but they also release them on this cartridge format, which I love the idea of the fact they're still releasing stuff on cartridge. But the one that really took my fancy was Super Breadbox, which is essentially a conversion of a game that goes by the name of Super Crate Box, I think it was called, which you can get free download on the PC. And it's also on the iOS and I think Android platforms. This is a great one-screen shooter where the whole idea is to pick up as many different weapons as you can, not necessarily just to blow up all the different aliens that come pummeling down at you, but some wonderful little touches on it and really great coding on the Commodore 64. The screen shakes, there's lots of enemies on screen. It's just a fantastic, addictive little platform shoot 'em up. I recommend checking that out, even if you just have a look at it on YouTube, a Super Breadbox for the Commodore 64. And that is being released on cartridge, and I can't wait to get that on cartridge. I think that is going to be a cracking game just to have a little play on. But just coming back to the guys down at RGCD, their website's really active, pushing the sort of indie game development scene, but with a massive emphasis on Commodore 64. So it's well worth a look over there. Have a look at their competitions, download some of the games, pay them on some emulators, or buy them for your Commodore 64. But going back to the whole development for the old legacy systems, like I say, I definitely want to do a feature on this at some stage, or even an article on the website. I bought a game which RGCD again were involved in, and Cytronic Software, called Solus, which was a sort of Metroid-style platform exploring game, which really was very, very slickly done, beautiful music, great graphics. It's a little bit annoying, you have to explore every little item just to pick up pieces to actually allow you to complete the game. But overall, the game, if it was released back in the 1990s, or say 1992 in the latter days of Commodore 64, it would definitely been a full price game. If it had been released in 1989 or even 88, people would have been stunned by what the Commodore 64 could produce. Brilliant game, that's called Solus. So yeah, that's game development for legacy systems. It's definitely worth checking out. If you're into retro gaming, just have a little search around on the internet and you can find lots of these systems are still being produced for in the homebrew world, right from the Vectrex, Spectrum, Commodore 64, Amiga, etc, etc. So there we go. Anyway, that rounds up the news for me.
Hello, this is Potty Boy, and you're listening to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum.
So yeah, as you know, we're pretty close to Christmas now, and as I said at the start of the show, Christmas is an absolutely magical time of year for me. There's obviously some badder memories with Christmas, with the, you know, the loss of loved ones and so on, but it just, every single year, and certainly the last few years, I've been making it feel better and better again. I have a great time with my lovely lady. We like to, because we don't actually live together at the moment, we kind of get two Christmas days. So we get the one when I'm with my parents and my brothers and so on, and then in the evenings I go around to her house or she comes to mine, and we have a second Christmas day when we start opening more presents and so on. So Christmas has kind of taken this cycle for me where in my 20s I still made an effort, I was still good, but it was at the time when I was going out a lot and coming in not the greatest states on Christmas Eve, but I'd still get myself up early on Christmas Day. I've always made the effort on Christmas Day. But my 20s was, I don't know, it wasn't really as good as what I'm finding it again now. Obviously, we all know when we're kids, Christmas is the best time of the year. It really is. The time when you get loads of presents. When you get older, obviously you've got to start buying more and more presents for other people, and that's great. And there's nothing like seeing someone open one of your presents, and the look on their face as they see that present is fantastic. I can understand the feeling parents get when they see their child opening presents up, and their face lights up. It must be fantastic. It must be a fantastic feeling. But going back to what Andy was saying on one of the last podcasts around having Dean around, felt like the retro gaming days of old, been down the chip shop, that kind of community friendship thing going on. And Christmas has that feeling for me as well. It's about the family getting together and doing stuff together. But also, throughout the whole of my life, it's been about computers in some way, shape or form. So I'd either get a game for Christmas, I'd either get some kind of piece of hardware for my Amiga, or a new console. It was always about that, and I think nowadays what's happening for me now, and certainly this year, I still write lists for people because I've got quite niche tastes both inside retro gaming and outside retro gaming with my music and with just stuff I own. I've always been quite niche or never gone for stuff that everyone would buy. I still write lists for everyone so they can pick off a list, and this year more than ever, I've put loads of old games in there. Nintendo 64 games, GameCube games, SNES games. Stuff I didn't pick up in the first place and stuff I want to have now. I think I'm maybe trying to relive those days. And I'm not sure if that's a good thing or not. I said at the start of the show, this might be a bit of a sort of fact-finding chat about myself here. Am I doing this, writing down on my list loads of old computer games, am I doing this at Christmas to try and recapture those old feelings? I think I am. I genuinely believe I am. I want to feel like I did when I was sort of 12, 13, 14, or even younger than that again. And we're never, ever going to get that. You're never going to get that feeling all over again. But you can recapture some of that magic, I think. And that is the reason why this year I've put down lots of old stuff on my list, as well as some newer stuff as well, of course. There's a couple of new games on there. Formula One game, WRC game. I love my driving games on the current platforms, but just like Andy said, retro gaming has something about it that modern game doesn't have. And in one of the earlier podcasts, I alluded to bottling up that atmosphere of Christmas and retro gaming. And if you could get that back, I think we would pay through the nose for it. We really would. As we're coming up to Christmas, I polled out to the forums to see what people's best and worst Christmas presents were. And I'm struggling to really think back and find a worst Christmas present of mine. I've never really got clothing, never traditionally got clothing for Christmas, so I can't say I've got a naff pair of socks or a crap t-shirt or something like that. I've always got either electronics equipment, computer games, console games, a new bit of hardware, a new bit of music hardware. So I'm really struggling to see the worst Christmas present because I've been always quite prescriptive about what I want. That's probably why.
But like I say, I polled out to the forum on www.retroasylum.com. And if you don't know the website, that is the website for us. Get on there, get to the forum, introduce yourself for a friendly bunch on there, and come and join in some of the discussions. So I asked people what the best and worst Christmas presents were. I'll come on to mine in a bit. So we've got Swain, who said his best was Transformers, G1 Jetfire and the Spectrum Plus 2. And that's interesting, actually. I remember when I used to write lists for Santa and post it to the letterbox the night before, or whenever I did it, I always wanted Optimus Prime. And I think 2 years running, I wrote Optimus Prime down. I didn't get anywhere near it. And looking back now, I can understand why my parents were sort of never earning the most amount of money. Three kids, probably three quite demanding kids, actually. No wonder I never got Optimus Prime. So I may treat myself one day to Optimus Prime just to say I've got it, I've had it in my life. Sticking with Swain as well, Double Dragon on the Spectrum was his worst. And do you know what? I've never seen Double Dragon on the Spectrum, so I don't know what all this hoo-ha is about. I'm sure it's absolutely valid, Dean. And no wonder you're working on a remake, I would have thought. So we've got Danger Mice right there. Favourite would have been the CPC you got for Christmas 86. Good dates there, I like that. And the worst being some of his cheesy jumpers he got. But he does mention that he'd oddly rather enjoys a cheesy jumper these days. I think that, mate, is age getting to us. I think as we get older, we tame ourselves down a little bit. Potty Boy, favourite Game Gear in 1994. Great to have a date on that again. Brilliant stuff. And worst was Lion King for the Amiga. He says it's a terrible conversion. Again, not seen or played that, so I don't know. Coming on to myself, just quickly before we go on to some more of them. My best ever Christmas present, I think the one that kick-started more in my life than anything else was my Amiga in 1991. And there's quite a little story behind that. I seem to have a lot of bad luck with electronics equipment. And on Christmas Day, I opened up my A500. There it was, beautiful. Workbench 1.3. I was just in love from the minute I opened it. I knew I was getting it. I'd seen it on top of my mum and dad's wardrobe in the run-up to Christmas. There it was. Absolutely stunning machine. Still to this day, it's a stunning machine. But within a day, it was having some kind of resetting problems. We had to take it back to John Lewis, it was, and get another one. And it just so happened that the A500 Plus had just about been released. So I essentially ended up with a better one, which in turn come with its own set of incompatibility problems, as you well know. But that also had a problem with the power pack. The power pack wouldn't switch on all the time. So I remember going back to John Lewis the day after, getting a power pack, etc. Done deal. But the Amiga, that kick-started so much for me in my life. I moved on to the A1200 later on, which I upgraded quite heavily. And I stuck with that right through to about the year 2000. So I think that was probably one of my best Christmas presents. But there was also stuff like a BMX, which was actually a hand-me-down for my brother. But it was still one of the best BMXs in the local area that anyone had. Absolutely brilliant. What else did I get for Christmas throughout my times? I think maybe a GameCube or GameCube games, Nintendo 64, possibly. I'm not too great at remembering stuff like that, but the Amiga, absolutely brilliant. And I think I got an Aura sound card for my Amiga one Christmas. This was boosted its 8-bit abilities up to 12-bit sound abilities, and being a music maker on the Amiga, I was very, very keen on that. So I had some wonderful presents out the years, right from very, very young, and all from, you know, parents not on the greatest wage. It was fantastic. Look back on those times very, very fondly. Worst, like I say, I don't think I can give you a worst one. They've all been fairly good, but again, I've been quite prescriptive over that in my time. So let's go through the people on the forum once more. We've got Scopey, got his PlayStation in Christmas 1995 with many games. I can see that being quite good. I've never been a fan of the PlayStation, and Scopey again coming for the Amiga, saying what a great piece of kit it was. And when I first saw my mate's PS1, PSX as a lot of people call it, and Wipeout, absolutely fantastic, Destruction Derby, when we first saw that, it was the first foray into 3D graphics, I think, that looked kind of realistic. Look back now, obviously they don't look so great, but really, really good, absolutely great. As we move on down in the forum, we've got another one, Dirk Dig Dugler, who's got himself a PS1 at some stage. But his favourite ever present was Indiana Jones, Tomb of the Emperor. There we are. That's it, really. Tiol has got... are we saying he'd like to forget the cover disc, which I think was on the 1994. The One Amiga. I don't know what that was, but I can understand probably where you're coming from. Great magazine, though, The One. Absolutely great magazine from back in the time. And then we got Mog79, said was his Atari ST. First ever computer, which came with quite a few games packaged with it. Never had an ST myself. My brother had an ST, and soon traded it back, I think, for a Spectrum, and then soon to upgrade to the Amiga. But, you know, get yourselves in the forums, into the comments, and tell us what your favourite Christmas presents were and what some of your worst Christmas presents were, because I'm sure we've all got a couple that we can remember. I'm clearly the exception to that rule, but I do have a shocking memory.
Hey everybody, this is Buzzbot from Oddpod and the Free Bees podcast. You're listening to the most greatest, funkiest retro gaming podcast in the world, Retro Asylum.
So we here at Retro Asylum are doing a Christmas podcast, which will be the next one up, and that will be due out just before Christmas. And we're all putting together a little section for that. So myself, obviously, Andy, Dean, Darren and Glenn are going to put a little section into that. So it'll be a nice Christmas show, pretty laden with Christmas music. And I think that's going to be a good one to listen out for. Hopefully we'll get that way over the hour, and a bit of great listen for you all. So I'm going to finish this off with a... we're talking about Kickstarter right at the beginning, and I know this subject has been done to death on forums, but what game would you want to remake? So I'm going to give it a little twist on this. Of what game would you like to get a Kickstarter going for, get in touch with the developer, and put out there, really? So I'm going to give you what mine would be. Without a shadow of a doubt, it would be Stunt Car Racer from the Amiga by Jeff Crammond. This game, as we spoke about in the Top 10 Amiga Driving Games podcast, is just one of the greatest games ever created, really. And it's never been matched since. There's never been anything that's come close to it since. In fact, I don't even think there's been much of a similar nature since. It's a game where you're driving on made-up tracks, which have got lots of banking in it, humps, bridges and so forth on it, and it really is a game that I think needs to be redone on today's platforms. It would work so well with the online gaming that we have nowadays. It was only the two cars on the track, but that didn't matter. That still felt like a race, and I think you know, having too many cars on track can often be a bit of a hindrance rather than an aid to good fun. But with today's technologies, what a fantastic game it could be. Real plush environments, but still keeping it on the same lines. Excellently modelled cars, obviously. But the physics could be so much better. The physics was still pretty good back then, but you know, you could keep it fairly simplistic with just the two cars on track, like I said. Tracks that were similar but much better environments, but that leaves a lot of room for physics going on. If you take a game, a racing game of nowadays, something like Formula One 2012, for instance, GT5 Forza, there's a lot of other cars on the tracks, each with their own physics models. All right, that's probably slightly simplified compared to your player's physics model, but with just two cars on the track, there's massive scope for tyres physics, car physics, suspension physics, and I think that would be a fantastic game to bring back nowadays. And I think it would be a real shame if we get to the end of our gaming careers and this game hasn't been remade in some way. There was talk of it some years ago in some interviews, or in a interview by Jeff Crammond. There was Stunt Car Racer Pro, I think it was being deemed. Nothing ever come of it, much like nothing ever come of Grand Prix 4 on the original Xbox, which I was looking forward to massively. That was cancelled. I'm sure it was something to do with publisher running out of money and so forth. But Stunt Car Racer Pro, whether it sell well, and that's a good one, and I think that's where Kickstarter comes into its own, because it really gives you that forum for finding out if something's going to sell and something's going to work. Would it sell? I'm not sure, actually, and maybe this is the reason why it's never come about. Is it really
appealing to the masses. I'm not sure it would, but you got to just look at Dirt from Codemasters, and that's got tracks which have got undulations and so forth in, and that's probably the closest we're ever going to get to something like that. But again, you've got lots of other players on the track, but massively popular game, probably originally because it had the Colin McRae name against it, but I don't think it's got that on it anymore. But yeah, Stunt Car Racer Pro for me would be the one I would want to remake the most. Obviously, we've got Dizzy that's being remade or being put through the Kickstarter. Elite, like I spoke about earlier. And there's been lots of other remakes being pushed out onto there. Our very own Danger Mice is doing a remake of Starquake. Not through Kickstarter, but that's looking really, really nice. If you want to see that, get onto the Retro Asylum forum. Have a look on the threads on there. Danger Mice has posted up a few good clips of that, and it's work in progress right now for the PC. So I think that brings me to the end of this number 28 and a half podcast. I've kind of wanted to go a bit more into the Christmas side of things, but not really got round to that, and we've got the Christmas podcast coming up, so I'd like to touch a bit more on the Christmas stuff down the line on that podcast. But not to forget, we've got one final thing to talk about on here. So as the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, we like to give the odd little thing away from time to time. And this time round, we're giving away an N64 kindly donated by Dean Swain. How do you win this? I'm sure you're very keen to find out. Now, it comes bundled with a whole bunch of games. I'm not sure what they are right now. If you check one of the previous podcasts, Andy does mention it. But how do you win this? Well, the two easy ways to enter yourself into this is, firstly, leave us an iTunes review. Not only does it enter you into the competition, and those that have submitted an iTunes review previously automatically entered into this competition. So I'm in there along with some other people. Long before I joined the team, I posted a review. So maybe I might win it, but that's probably a bit unfair, actually. So leave us an iTunes review. It helps push us up the iTunes table. You know, when someone looks at, someone types in retro gaming, they'll get the Retro Asylum podcast come up. They'll see there's a lot of reviews. That will encourage them to download it. And the more listeners we have, the more inclined we are to do this show, and the more inclined Andy is to keep pushing us forward. So leave us an iTunes review. Constructive criticism, always welcomed. But I'm sure you guys love it too much to write anything bad about us. The second way you can do it is like our Facebook page. So just pop onto Facebook, search for Retro Asylum and like it there. There's two really easy ways to do it. The third way is not quite so easy, but it's a bit of fun. Andy's been playing a bit of music on the other podcasts, and I'm sure we'll get this at the end of this podcast. You need to name that tune, and if you can just email Andy, that would be fantastic. Again, his email address is mentioned in the other podcasts. Because I must admit, off the top of my head, I'm not too sure about it. So there's three ways to enter. Name that tune, iTunes review, and like our Facebook page. And you can win an N64. That's coming up soon. And it's a fantastic prize and something that will remind you of Christmases gone by if you've had one before. And there's plenty of fantastic games on the N64. So I'm signing off now. Matt Denaris has been talking nonsense for the past half hour or so. I hope you've enjoyed it, and until the next time, this has been the Retro Asylum podcast. Thanks very much for listening.